Welcome to the Oldie Podcast. This is from our literary lunch featuring guest speakers. Our lunches are held monthly. Details and how to book can be found in our magazine and on the website at www.theoldie.co.uk. Kindly sponsored by Charles Stanley Wealth Managers, providing financial peace of mind to clients since 1792.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for coming today to the Oldie Lunch. My name is Harry Mount, editor of the greatest magazine in the stratosphere, The Oldie. We're only here thanks to the extremely kind sponsorship of Charles Stanley. Thank you so much. And I'm a poor imitation of the late, great Barry Cryer, who used to do this job much better than me. His jokes still account for a third of the Aldie website traffic. Only at the Aldie would you get a dead comedian at the top of the leaderboard. And this is latest top joke in the Aldie, which is a gorilla walks into a pub and asks for a pint of bitter. And the barman says, that'll be £6.50. And the gorilla says, what, that's outrageous. And the barman says, funnily enough, you're the first gorilla we've had in this pub. And the gorilla says, at those prices, I'm not surprised. Now, our first speaker is the world's greatest rock and roll architect. Paul Davis was principal architect for the Cadogan Estate, not far from here in Chelsea, designed and built over 140 buildings. He also designed recording studios, houses, and stage sets for Roxy Music, the Moody Blues, Duran Duran, and Ringo Starr. And he did the light shows for The Who and Pink Floyd. And he's here to talk about his new book, Mr. Chelsea, A Life in Rock and Roll Architecture from the King's Road to Tokyo. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Paul Davis.
Whoops. Unlike Philippa and Helen, I'm not used to being on TV, which I am down there. Anyway, I'm sure they'll be amazing, and their books I've started to look at already, just from what I've read, are fab. So I hope you'll all buy lots of books. Anyway, a young brain is a remarkable muscle. I was half deaf until the age of 9 3/4. It was like living under a blanket. My little brain must have been racing to make synaptic visual connections. Sketchbook after sketchbook was filled with birds, animals, cars, people and places. Even now, I could sketch the bedroom where I woke up in the Brompton Hospital, aged 9 7/8. Eureka. I could hear high frequency sounds for the first time. The interesting thing then was that 60 years on, when I came to write about this life-changing moment in my memoir, I remembered for the very first time hearing the bus wheels on the wet Fulham Road outside that room. I'd never heard it before, but writing about it brought it back. Now, delving into memory is perhaps one illuminating reason for writing a memoir. Unlike our two lady speakers this afternoon, authors, I should say, I imagine that most of you will not know my name or what I achieved as an architect. Harry introduced it by way of some of the work that I've done, but I never did eye-catching concrete capsules or all glass impractical icons. Hence, I did not achieve the celebrity starchitect status of some of my profession. Nor was that my ambition. If any of you have enjoyed walking down Sloane Street along the King's Road, sitting in the Duke of York Square, seeing an exhibition at the Saatchi Gallery, or listening to a concert in Cadogan Hall, that would delight me. I have restored over 250 buildings in Chelsea and Westminster. As Harry said, 140 just on the Cadogan Estate in Chelsea. I did actually found a sustainability consultancy 20 years ago that now has 60 specialist advisors, and I'm actually very proud of that side of life. For 16 years, I was architect to Christopher Wren's secular masterpiece, the Royal Hospital Chelsea, and that's how my nickname, Mr. Chelsea, came about. It's not pure arrogance. Central London has evolved around various villages, mostly under the long-term stewardship of the aristocratic landed estates. I was fortunate to work for seven of those estates, and I'm the only one alive that has done that. Another cultural adventure began when Grosvenor invited me to design some projects in Hong Kong and Tokyo. They were new and exciting challenges. But by way of entertaining contrast, I had fun across a few decades of rock and roll. In 1978, I designed a studio for Roxy Music, who were being quite experimental with various of their recordings. But recording technology had changed, but studio design hadn't. My solution of adaptable acoustics proved radical and influential, and the next thing I knew, I was being flown off to Los Angeles, San Francisco, New York, and Paris to advise big-name studios there, and that was a lot of fun. Following on from that, I found myself designing houses for all of Roxy Music, four of Duran Duran, and their world tour stage sets. Again, touring with bands like that was quite a lot of fun. And then last but not least, together with Nicky Haslam, who writes for the oldie, I designed Ringo Starr and Barbara Bach's Surrey Mansion. But despite the evolving technology in design, I can't draw a line on a computer. I still draw every day with pencil and pen. I even wrote every word of my memoir with my fountain pen on paper. But then, for me, drawing and writing are both art, and actually telling stories through pictures or words are part of the same language. Us analog oldies are lucky to have lived when travel to certain places that are now off limits, but once were possible. In 1971, I hitchhiked across Sahara, North Africa. It was life-changing, but perilous. I survived in one piece, but actually only just. 3 years later, and better prepared, my wife Susie made sure of that. We traveled right the way around Iran, what I still prefer to call Persia, and we crossed the old Silk Road. Once the journey we took was 40 days and 40 nights by laden camel. I have a map with it, it's still written on it. But happily, by 74, it was a bit quicker by oil truck. Our stories of that majestic country, sadly in the state it is today, our stories are full of wonder and colour. But crossing back into Turkey, a biblical storm raged over Mount Ararat, just across the plateau. I was arrested and handcuffed. While our captor slept, Susie stole his keys, undid the cuffs, and we escaped across Kurdish bandit country. That was a rather long, life-changing moment. The world is a book, and those who do not travel read only one page. A little favourite saying from Ibn Khaldun in the 14th century. But one page is never enough. Although one page I have visited repeatedly is the Alhambra, the 13th century palace on the hill that overlooks the city of Granada. It is a most special place of sensory delight and surprise. The Taj Mahal may be the greater icon, but in my view, the Alhambra is more wonderful as a place. If you don't believe me, do read chapter 18 of my memoir, or more eloquently, Washington Irving's sublime Tales of the Alhambra, my favourite book. I do believe in learning from the past and the evolution of ideas. I have to say I'm much less convinced about the concept of original thought. I'll give you one good reason. Brunelleschi won the competition to design the Duomo in Florence in 1418, but did not know how to build this tall new shape. At the time, trade was booming between Italy and Persia. We do know that Brunelleschi disappeared for 19 months. When he reappeared, he had found the secret solution. It just happened to be almost identical to Sultanieh in Western Persia, completed 94 years earlier. So, why be an architect? I've told Philippa some of the reasons why. I was lucky with certain school teachers that helped to point me in that direction. But for me, whatever the type of project, is it not for the enjoyment of the people who inhabit, in whatever way, the place you've designed? Question there, what if it be an art gallery? In a recent Oldie podcast, Edward Butynsky described the Saatchi Gallery as the perfect space to mount his spectacular exhibition. That was rather reassuring. Or a concert hall for the RPO. Cadogan Hall was a derelict church. It's now regarded as one of the top three venues in Europe for recording live classical music. And I have heard how many musicians really enjoy playing there. A few months after completion, I went round to check some defects. The auditorium was empty. I sat down at the back. There were 24 musicians on stage and a soloist facing them back to the auditorium. He was small of stature, wearing jeans and a leather bomber jacket. The rehearsal began. It was Jose Carreras, and I could hear every note here, high or low. My first residential project for Grosvenor was completed in 1984. In May 94, the phone rang. A gentleman I didn't know had tracked me down. He said, "You don't know me, but my wife and I have lived at number 5 Cobham Court for the last 10 years. I wanted to call you to thank you for all the thought and care that you put into every detail of our home that we have so enjoyed living in. And that's why this now old boy wanted to be an architect." Thank you for listening.
Thank you so much, Paul, for a very moving speech.
Kindly sponsored by Charles Stanley Wealth Managers, providing financial peace of mind to clients since 1792. You have been listening to the Oldie Podcast. Please share this episode. Look out for the Oldie Magazine subscription offer on our website, www.theoldie.co.uk. Thank you and good luck.